The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell and welcome to 1874, The Athletic's podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. It's the morning after the night before. We've got two games to go through. The Crystal Palace win on Saturday and a plucky defeat against Manchester City at Villa Park last night. Joined as ever by Holly, and Greg is back from his week off. Greg, you haven't heard of you for a while. Impressive from Steven Gerrard so far, hasn't it been?
I don't think I had a week off. It certainly didn't feel like I did.
You weren't on a podcast, if I recall.
Yeah, I missed a podcast, didn't I? But I definitely didn't miss a week at work because I'm still...
I assumed you had another week
off. I'm still
off,
knackered, so I know I haven't had any time off. But Steven Gerrard's been really impressive. I think the first two performances were decent. The first two results were fantastic. And last night's game against Man City, there were also some positive signs. And I'm really enjoying interactions with him as well. You know, he's great in press conferences, very open, very honest. And answering questions in a lot more detail than Dean Smith was towards the end. So, yeah, positive signs at the moment.
Holly, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Still happy, Holly, I feel like, even though after the defeat last night, so can't complain too much.
Yeah, we kind of reverted to type last night, losing under your watch, Holly, even though you're not the manager and it's absolutely nothing to do with you. You're not on the pitch. Let's talk about the Crystal Palace game on Saturday first then. Greg, you were there just like me. An organised, efficient performance, I would say, from Aston Villa Football Club, and a great away win. One of my favourite away days. If we ever do a top three on away games, I'll probably stick this one in there because it was a really good away performance, and I don't often see good away performances.
Well, hold on a minute. First of all, let's get onto the menu that was in the posh seats, please, Dan, at Selhurst Park. Can you talk us through your experience before I share mine?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be in the director's box on Saturday, and it was very, very nice, Greg. Crystal Palace, good hosts, good hospitality, good service, very, very attentive, I would say. And as I say, the menu was very nice for me. I'm vegetarian, not a lot I can eat sometimes at these things, but macaroni and cheese was put on. It was very, very nice. I enjoyed it. It really started the day off on a high, and then it just carried on getting better from there, really.
Any tips for our listeners who would, you know, strive to get into the director's box at away games?
Just work hard. That would always be my advice. Work hard, Greg. You know I'm a hard worker.
I sense you're getting a bit uncomfortable with this conversation, so we'll move on to some real talk, shall we?
I'm sure it'll get edited out, so we'll be okay. Tell me about the game.
Look, it was impressive, wasn't it? I think Villa went back to, not necessarily back to basics. I think they just became a little bit harder to beat. I wrote at length after the game about the patterns of play that they've been working on in the week. I also noticed a couple of patterns of play they were trying to perfect in the warm-up before the game. And it felt like Villa were trying to attack through central positions. They sort of blocked off all the middle of the pitch, really, and owned that middle of the pitch and didn't let Crystal Palace play through them. They allowed them to have the width, but Crystal Palace didn't expose them. I thought Zaha was quite quiet. And Villa were very, very good going forward. I thought that the front five players almost with Young, Watkins and Baylor and then Ramsey and McGinn contributing behind, I thought the five of them interchanged really well, created lots of opportunities and went and got a good win. I thought it was a really impressive display.
Yeah, I've got to say about the Ashley Young shout, you haven't obviously been on yet. You made that shout in the podcast a few weeks ago about Ashley Young perhaps playing further forward. And Holly laughed it off. I agreed that it could possibly happen. Holly absolutely laughed it off. But how does it feel? There was a few comments on Twitter as well saying, you're mad, Greg. Thought you were mad, but fair play. You seem to know what you're doing.
Well, yeah, believe it or not, I tend to write and talk about the things that are actually told to me from the club. So I'll try and give as much insight as possible. Sometimes they might sound like they're outlandish claims. But yeah, this one was proven in all the games Young's played. I think Villa have actually looked better every time Ashley Young's been on the pitch. And
yeah, same last night.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he came off the bench last night and I thought Villa were better. So clearly Steven Gerrard likes him and clearly Young has got a part to play this year.
I'm starting to think Steven Gerrard might be a distant relative of yours with the information that you're getting, but we'll find out more in a few weeks. Holly, Greg talks about that shape, and it's encouraging that already you can see how much work has gone in at training in a short space of time. He hasn't had loads of time with the players, Steven Gerrard, but that stuff that Greg talks about is really, really important, because they did block off the middle of the pitch. Even the two playing behind the striker, they defended so, so narrow. And it is almost back to basics, but it's what Villa needed to do, because the basics of defending weren't there in the weeks leading up to Dean Smith's departure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when Villa kind of came back out after Project Restart, you could tell the main focus under Dean Smith was to just be more defensively solid. And Steven Gerrard's come in and made that his main aim as well. And he's obviously already shown good success in that. I think having McGinn and Nakamba in front of that defensive line will have given the strikers a lot more confidence to go up and kind of play aggressively, because they knew they could trust McGinn and Nakamba behind them to shield the defensive line. So it's good to see so much structure that is working the right way and working as it should, and everyone knows their roles in that. So even against the game last night, you know, Villa looked structured even in a defeat. So if that can carry on through each game now and progress and improve, then I think Villa have every chance of edging back towards the top half of the table.
Yeah, one thing I noticed, not so much last night, but from where I was sitting at Palace, because I usually sit behind the goal whenever I'm at a game, so it was a different vantage point for me. Cash and Target were bombing right up when Villa were on the attack, but when they would go, they'd both go at the same time. The two central midfielders on the outside, McGinn and Ramsey, they were covering off the wide place, and McGinn was basically man-marking Zaha quite a lot of the time. I thought that was quite interesting.
It's exactly the same as Rangers were working in big games against Celtic, in European games. Against inferior opposition, Rangers typically tended to dominate possession. I think they averaged something like 68 to 70% possession, you know, for obvious reasons. But when they played against the big teams, they tended to become a little bit more solid defensively, and that was certainly one of the systems that they used. When the fullbacks got forward to Vernie and Barisic, the midfielders would drop in and cover. So that's certainly what we're seeing already at Villa. They're using almost that Christmas tree formation, isn't it? The 4-3-2-1, where the wide players that we knew typically as wide players, Young, El Ghazi when he came on, Buendia and Baylor, they tend to play, you know, as number 10, inverted wingers. And it just blocks off the middle of the pitch. There's a motto that Michael Beale uses, and it's own the middle of the pitch. And clearly Villa have tried to do that so far. So it's interesting, and I like what they're trying to do. I think that it will work, especially against the lower ranked teams in the Premier League. And I'm at the point now where I feel this Villa team will start to win more games than they'll lose. And that's a big thing, because having lost 5 on the bounce under Dean Smith at the end of his reign, it didn't look like it was ever going to be that way.
And a big thing across the three games so far for me, Holly, is the improvement in the central midfield, both ways. Steven Gerrard's talked about the distances between the midfield and the defence and the midfield and the attack. But the individual performances, anyone that's played has been much, much improved.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like Greg said, that Christmas tree formation has worked well for Villa. And I think in that midfield, for some reason, it's already kind of clicked into place in terms of the rotations between covering defensively or covering slightly higher up the pitch midfield as well. So I think this is probably the best we've seen John McGinn and Nakamba kind of work together so well in the midfield so far. And you've had Watkins and Jacob Ramsey drop back to help cover even McGinn and Nakamba in the times that they've needed to as well. So, and I actually think Buendia's kind of really started to find his feet under this kind of new format that Gerrard's implementing. Last night, personally, I think was Buendia's arguably best game. So it's kind of just up and up, I think, in terms of the more time this kind of formation and this structure has, it can, like Greg said, only get better, and we'll start seeing more positive, consistent results.
Yeah, and talking of positivity, let's talk about last night then, fresh in all our minds, Greg. I would say that was a positive defeat. I saw a tweet last night, someone saying they've not walked out of Villa Park feeling so positive after a defeat before, and I would go along with that. You know, I said plucky at the start, but Villa really, really, from 2-0 down, could have taken a point off Manchester City last night.
It was spirited, wasn't it? That's how I described it. And in the story that I've written today, this morning, about the game last night, that the first couple of paragraphs centred around Steven Gerrard's mood in the press conference after the game. And he was as buoyed as you'll ever see. You know, it felt like that they'd just gone and won the game. It was because 2 weeks into the job, he's seen his Villa side take on a Manchester City side. Obviously, the champions of England and the team's, you know, exceptionally high in talent. And he's had them running scared in the second half. The first half was a joke. I thought it was going to be 4 or 5 nil. I was really, really concerned for Villa. But the second half, they clearly showed a good reaction. They tightened up a little bit. The distances between midfield and defence were much shorter. They didn't get caught on the counter-attack too much. Perhaps that was because Man City had got the lead, and Pep Guardiola tends to protect the victories at times now rather than continuing to go all-out attack. But I just think as brilliant, and it was absolutely sensational, the second goal for Man City, as brilliant as it was for them, there were some defensive errors in there for Villa. First of all, they should have either won the ball back higher up and not let Mahrez and Cancelo play out from the back the way they did. But if they didn't win it back, they should have broke up the game and took a foul, took one of those ones for the team where it just slowed them down and allowed the players to come back and get back into the shape. And thirdly, if they didn't do any of those, I think they still could have marked up better around the halfway line. Mings and Cons were a little bit caught out. Cash was high up. And it was just that ball round to Jesus and that opened it up. Brilliant cross and an unbelievable finish. I described it as one of the best goals I've ever seen live. And, I still stand by it today. I was in awe of it for so long. I was talking to the people around me in the press box thinking, I just can't get over this goal. It was absolutely fantastic from Cancelo's headers, the way Mahrez wriggled away from, I think it was Luiz and Buendia, for Fernandinho's brilliant pass and an absolutely stunning finish. I think Bernardo was looking at it thinking, this ball's coming over to me now, I might as well just hit it. And it was such an unbelievable finish, side-footed volley. Martinez had no chance. And I just thought, wow, what an unbelievable goal. But when you look back through it, Villa could have done a lot better. And I think that's one of the areas where Gerrard will be looking to improve on. But overall, a brilliant performance.
Yeah, he spoke about that goal in his post-match with the club media, Gerrard. He wasn't happy with the defending, but Holler, like Greg says, everything Manchester City did there was just pinpoint, exquisite. They didn't do a thing wrong. Everything was bang on, accurate, and the finish from Bernardo Silva was just sensational. And they're the standards. Yeah, they're the standards that we want Villa to get to one day. But Manchester City are an unbelievable team, and that just showed how good they are.
Yeah, I mean, they're Premier League winners, the Champions League finalists. That kind of winning those kind of games is expected of them. So, like you said, they were pinpoint with everything they did in that game. And I'm one of those fans who, I don't know if anyone else is the same, but if you concede two good goals or a really good goal that is the difference between your side and the opposition, I almost can't be mad at it. As soon as that silver goal hit the back of the net, I was like, I can't even complain, because like Greg said, the cross by Jesus, the first touch finish, like it's hands down has to be up there probably for goal of the season already, and we're not even halfway through the campaign. So I mean, frustrated at losing like you would be, but Man City showed how clinical they are as a team and how they're one of the best in the world. So I think the fact that Villa managed to pull it back to 2-1 and still show that determination to try and get at least a point shows a lot about Villa's determination and where they want to be, like you've just said, Dan. So again, congratulations to City, because for me that shows that they're very much in the race to win the Premier League once again.
You know a goal is good if the whole end are clapping it. I clapped it, but there was quite a lot of people in the hot end that clapped that goal. Unbelievable. And Bernardo Silva was unbelievable all night and has been unbelievable every time I've watched Manchester City this season. I mean, Salah will get the PFA Player of the Year, but Bernardo Silva's been the best player to watch this season for me. He's incredible everywhere for Manchester City. But yeah, Villa worked hard in that second half. I think I tweeted at half-time, Greg, that Manchester City were on a different planet to Villa in the first half. Second half, not really.
No, they weren't.
You know, it was a good fight and a great start to get that set-piece goal. Austin McPhee's back in our good books. I saw Luiz run straight over to him to celebrate with him for the goal, because it was Luiz that put the corner in. It was a nicely worked routine again. And, maybe people thought Austin McPhee might end up leaving when Gerrard came in, but so far, playing a decent part again.
Yeah, attacking set pieces are working well again for Villa, aren't they? They've scored a couple now under the Gerrard reign. And Gerrard spoke positively about Austin McPhee, said that his qualities will help Villa through. They spend a lot of time on set pieces in the week. Certainly when they have a full week, that the recession's laid on. to give Villa that advantage. I thought they were a threat all night. Well, especially in the second half, I thought they were a threat from set pieces, corners, throw-ins, free kicks. And that's going to be a difference against these big teams, because if you can score from set pieces, I mean, look, you know, any goal is good, obviously, but if you can score from a set piece, it keeps you in the game, and it showed with Villa. They scored the goal at the perfect time, and as I said earlier, they did have them running scared a little bit, Man City. I think I can only name one or two chances they had in the second half. Martinez really didn't have much to do, did he? But so it was Villa as the aggressors. I thought they were really trying hard to break through the middle again, get players forward. I thought Watkins had the best game under Gerrard for sure. Held the ball up superbly. And Buendia, as Holly mentioned earlier, probably had his best game in a Villa shirt as well. Still not quite there for me. Still needs to do a little bit more. Bailey the same, who's going to be out now for a while with an injury. That's a blow. Because it's my understanding that he was starting to look good in training, but it's, again, just another setback. But Buendia is still available, and that's going to be a positive, I think, because it's tough coming up, Liverpool, Leicester, and then back to his old club, Norwich. But I think he's starting to show signs that there's a player there.
Yeah, he'll get a run of games now, you would think.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It's good to see Watkins back in the goals as well, 2 in 3 under Steven Gerrard, because he hadn't been prolific so far this season, but he's looking sharp again, and to find the back of the net twice in the last 3 games, well, 2 home games in a row, that is a positive.
Yeah, massively. When Watkins scored that goal, my friend over in America, he's a Spurs fan, and he texted me and was like, Watkins is disgusting.
Is that a compliment?
It is. Okay. For people my age, that's a compliment. Okay.
Tell Greg he's disgusting later on in the podcast and see if he takes it as a compliment.
And we kind of do that to kind of compliment each other's teams every now and then. And it kind of reminded me how much of a good player and a good striker Watkins is. And when he's on his best, you know, he can score any kind of goal like that, whether that be headed or running through between the defenders. So hopefully he can keep that form going, because, like mentioned, we do have a tough run of fixtures ahead in the lead up to Christmas. So Watkins, I think, will be key for us in terms of getting a late equaliser or even scoring a couple of winners. And I also have to praise, in my opinion, could have made all the difference in getting a late equaliser. Carney Chukwuemeka, unbelievable performance, I thought, when he came on the pitch, and perhaps he gets more of a look in into the starting 11 with Bailey out injured as well.
You're surprised to see him come on, Greg, because El Ghazi's come on to good effect in the last 2 games in that kind of position. I thought he was a bit hard done by El Ghazi not getting on the pitch, and you know, Chukwuemeka's eyes would have lit up when he was through on goal on his left foot. If he just managed to get a little bit more power in it, he probably would have had his first goal in front of the whole end. But were you surprised to see him given the chance over El Ghazi? Because like I say, there'd been an impact from him in the last 2 games off the bench.
Yes and no. I wasn't surprised that he was called upon, because I know that Gerrard wants to have a closer look at all of his players. So last night, you know, he had a look at Chukwuemeka, had a look at Sanson as well. He came off the bench. So I think it's still quite an early period for Gerrard, and he wants to see what his players can produce in a game. That I think that was more of the thinking. I was surprised more that Chukwuemeka came on ahead of Ramsey rather than El Ghazi. I thought Ramsey would be the one to come on and try and make an impact.
He's got a few knocks, Ramsey, I think he said after the game.
Right, okay, sorry, I wasn't aware of that. He was on the bench though.
Yeah, he just says he's nursing a couple of injuries.
Oh, okay, perhaps that was the reason why then. I wasn't aware of that. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, it just shows his faith that he's got in him. You know, he would have seen him in training in the 2 weeks, seeing what he can do. He's an attacking, creative midfielder. there's a lot of noise around him at the moment, you know, with media reports saying that he's not going to sign a new deal. I've tried to put some clarity on that and explain where we were at. There's 18 months to go, so there's absolutely no rush for him to sign a new deal. He won't sign a new deal until he starts playing a lot of football, because there are other clubs out there that will promise him minutes. I've said that in many previous reports, but Steven Gerrard was asked about it last night, and he said, well, if there's anybody who thinks that that Carney's not going to be at this club in the future, then I'd like to have them in front of me right now and talk about it. He's confident that Chukwuemeka will get the minutes, that he'll score and assist a lot of goals for Aston Villa, and that he'll be a long-term part of the future. So it's interesting to see what will happen with him. But his chance last night was the big chance. For somebody who there's been a lot of noise around for an 18-year-old, if you're that good, you've got to put those chances away. And if he'd have put it either side of Edison, it would have been a goal. But he just hit it straight at him, and that could have been the difference.
He kind of popped up from nowhere. I didn't notice him, and suddenly he was just through on goal. But there was, again, I think because of the distances, I mean, we sound like Steven Gerrard because he's obviously something he spoke about and we keep using it ourselves. But because the players are playing close together, you're getting a more intricate short passing, which we weren't seeing from Villa before. So you're seeing people link up in a way that perhaps we haven't seen from Villa in the last few years because of those distances.
Well, that's what they've been working on specifically in training. You know, there's five attacking players, and then you've got the two fullbacks bombing on in Target and Cash. So at times there's seven players going forward, and they're all loose. They're all linking up loosely and closely, and it's working well, and it's exciting. And I think, because there's a lot of pace in midfield now, you know, with Buendia bombing on, with Bailey coming through, with Cash moving into central areas, I think, and Ramsey at times, I think what Villa are trying to do now is carry the ball better. Since Jack Grealish left, and I presume we'll get onto him at some point and his involvement last night, but since he's left, there's not really been anybody who can carry the ball well. I think Watkins tries it, but often loses it a little bit too much. And in the first half yesterday, Villa were getting into decent areas in the final third, but the final pass was killing them. There was a couple of opportunities where Buendia misplaced a pass, where I think Bailey ran through it and missed a pass, which was the worst of the lot. And it's just needing a little bit of fine-tuning. For me, it's exciting times. I can see what Villa are trying to do. They're becoming exciting to watch again. They just need that bit of fine-tuning, and that will come with time with the manager.
It will come on to Grealish, but can someone talk to me about the late penalty shout? Because I've got absolutely no memory of it whatsoever.
No, neither have I.
There was one at each end, and I was slightly surprised that the Cash one didn't get given. I'm not a huge fan of Mike Dean when he referees Aston Villa, but we will move away from that. Konza had a strike of the ball. As he tried to take the shot, he was tackled from behind, I believe, from Ake. And in my opinion, it should have been a penalty, because Ake doesn't get to the ball. Konza definitely wins the ball. And I think it actually stops his shot being on goal. The only thing I'm not sure of is if VAR actually reviewed it. I know that Mike Dean was very quick to make his decision while the Villa players ran over and screamed in his face. So, in my opinion, it should have been a penalty.
Why can I not remember that?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Absolutely no memory of whatsoever. Obviously, it was a late night and up early doing the podcast this morning, but I cannot remember that moment of the game. It's weird that Greg can't remember it. I'm starting to think it didn't happen.
I think if you watch it back, I genuinely think you'll think it's a penalty. I mean, I'm surprised that it wasn't. I really think it obstructed his chance of making a shot.
Oh, that's going to annoy me.
I'll have to watch that one back. Yeah.
I don't want to be annoyed.
Yeah, it's devastating.
Okay, interesting. Well, Greg and myself will go back and look at that, and we'll let you know next week whether we thought it was a penalty or not. Let's finish the Man City game then on Jack Grealish's return to Villa Park. Greg, it would have been an emotional game for him, emotional game for his family. I know some of his family were there last night, and a mixed reception, actually a better reception than I thought it was going to be. I went on Premier League TV yesterday before the game, and they asked me about what reception Grealish would get, and I said, you'll get a bad one. And I couldn't believe it, couldn't understand it. I mean, I would never, ever give him a bad reception. I was always going to clap him. I think he did an unbelievable amount for the football club. And I understand why he left, because he wants to play in the Champions League. And Villa aren't going to be doing that for a few years. So I get it. But I felt like his reception, it grew as the game went on. It was quite bad at the start. And then by the end of the game, when he came up to the four different stands, there was more cheers than boos.
Yeah, my thought was that he was going to get applauded before and after the game, and I could totally understand if Villa fans were a little bit frosty with him during the game, because look, they're all in it together, they're trying to get an advantage over Manchester City, and if that means getting under Jack Grealish's skin a little bit, then so be it. You know, I'm all for that. Although I don't think abuse from the stands has ever really particularly bothered Grealish in the past. I think he kind of thrives off that. So I watched him when he came out for the warm-up, and there were a lot of people, a lot of supporters around by me standing to wait to see him come out. And the people that were keenly, intently looking at the pitch were waiting to clap him. But when he came out, the majority of people around me started clapping. But there were a few boos from around the stands. And I thought, I kind of expected that. When he came on, the boos were louder, purely because there were more people in the ground, of course. But I think it was quite clever of the Villa supporters to sing, you know, "I'm Villa till I die." I think that was a very passionate message.
It was passionate, it was loud as well.
And everybody got involved with it. You know, that was the loudest chant of the night. They were all singing that and continued to sing that. So if Jack Grealish didn't get the message when he was coming on, he certainly would have in the final few minutes, because Villa continued to sing that song. At the end, I thought it was a nice touch from him to go round and applaud all four stands. Yeah, he's going to get some boos by some people, but I think the majority of them applauded him and recognised what he did for the club. And if you can't recognise what he did as for the club as a Villa fan, then I'm not sure where else he can go, because in the modern era, he's done more for the club than any player. So are you going to boo every single player that leaves in the future?
That has happened, to be honest. I was trying to think of someone that's come back and hasn't got booed, and I couldn't really think of any. Milner's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it at this weekend. Michael Brighton's going to come back with Leicester City, and he's going to get a hero's welcome. Now, the situation was slightly different with him. His contract expired. If Villa had have offered him a contract, or not taken so long to offer him a new contract, he would have stayed. But he went to Leicester, earned more money, won the Premier League. These things happen in football. And if the best football club in the country had come calling for Michael Brighton at the time, I'm pretty sure he would have gone too. And the Villa fans would have probably started to boo him then. So it's mad, isn't it, how football is. I'm all for the all in it together ethos, the siege mentality and all that. And I get that, but it's just a little bit short-sighted for me if you boo him because of what he's done for the club. And it'd be interesting to see what Michael Brighton gets at the weekend and how you can compare the two.
Yeah, someone said to me last night that I was saying that I understand why he left. I get it. Wanted to play in the Champions League, wanted to work with Pep, play with De Bruyne. I could understand it. And someone said to me, yeah, but he left just as we were getting good. And I kind of thought, well, we finished 11th. You know, that's miles away from Champions League. If you're a world-class player, I mean, I'm probably going to get panned for this. If you're a world-class player and you want to be playing in the Champions League, you know, a team finishing 11th, that's miles off it, miles off where you want to be. And just because you're a Villa fan, Holly, you want to test yourself against the best. So I fully understand it. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I get that there's always going to be people on both sides. But the highlight for me was when he came out kind of last out the subs. I don't know whether this was shown on telly, Holler. He's walking down and he stepped into the dugout and he missed the step and tripped up and fell over. I don't know whether anyone saw that.
I didn't see that.
All eyes were on him and he tripped up getting into the dugout.
Oh dear. I'm the same. I don't think he should have necessarily been booed. I think at the right time, like Greg said, to kind of psych him out might have been useful. Although I think...
Yeah, boo him on the ball.
Yeah, although I don't think, like we said, that would necessarily bother him so much. If anything, he'd thrive off of that. So for me, once the season's over, a player has to be selfish in their decisions and think about what's best for them in their career and going forward. And Grealish is ready now to be playing at the highest level possible. So, you know, the move was at the right time. And whenever a Villa player leaves now, and especially if it's someone who's so important to the team and makes that kind of step up to a better team or a team that's competing more competitively in different tournaments, nothing will ever be as bad as the Delph situation, who pledged his allegiance to the club and dedicated to being a captain. Grealish never said at the end of the season and going into the Euros, I'm here to stay, I will be here for the next 5 years. You know, that's the whole reason, part of the reason why he had the clause in his contract. So
he did sign a contract there for 5 years.
He did.
The club did use him for the My Club, My City thing, but I guess that's not his fault.
No, and I think also the 5 years thing, it's the club being clever in terms of getting the most financially out of him when he does go. So, you know, they wouldn't have got that much money if he'd signed only a 2-year deal. So I think that's probably why fans are still a little bit bitter as well, because like I did, probably thought we've definitely got one more season in him to help us get to European football. But, you know, ultimately he made that decision to go ahead of time.
I guess if he stays though, Greg, and then we quite qualified for Europe, let's say, it's then going to be, oh, he should give us another season because we're in the Europa League. But that's not where he wants to be. He wants to be in the Champions League. And you watched City last night and he's playing in an incredible team, albeit he probably only played for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. And look, I thought he did well when he came on. Pep Guardiola was asked about, you know, his performance, albeit only 4 or 5 minutes. But he did everything that was asked of him. You know, he helped see the game out. He held up the ball well, linked up play, ran down the clock. Typically what we've seen him do for Villa in the past. And look, a football career is so short. It's difficult for supporters who go every week and literally are, as they sang, Villa till they die. For footballers, it's just simply not the case. It's a different kind of love. Jack Grealish will always love Aston Villa, but not in the way that supporters do who go and sit on the Holt End every week. But there are people that say that he was motivated more by the money and moved by the money. Yes, the money was appealing, but it was to go and get success. It was to go and play in the Champions League, to become a regular in the England team. He's 26 years old and there are young players coming through in his position in for the England team now who are seriously threatening his place. And perhaps if he was at Villa, he might not have got the recognition that he deserved. We certainly thought that, didn't we, in the past, that Gareth Southgate wasn't playing him because he hadn't played elite level football. And for those who question the money situation, I mean, the increase in his wage is incredible. I mean, if I said to any supporter on the Holt End, for example, well, I'll give you'll get £20,000, but you can't go to the game on Saturday. What do you think they'll do? You know, that they won't go to the game, the majority of them. They'll take the £20,000. So, you know, that's just a way of looking at it. In all walks of life, if you get a job promotion, you typically tend to take it, no matter how happy you are at the club.
Also, if he'd have stayed at Villa, he'd have got a massive pay increase from the wage he was on at Villa as well. So it's not about money, because he could have got a lot of money at Villa.
He still wouldn't have been anywhere near the money he's on at City, though. So, you know.
Let's move on from Jack anyway.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Holly, there was a couple of interesting stories featuring Villa women's players this week. Hannah Hampton was a spectator as England women won 20-0. Unbelievable result. I don't think I've ever seen a 20-0 anywhere. A rugby score, you would say, that one. Talk us through it.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of talk of it on social media, and The Athletic actually put up a piece kind of analysing the ways in which there could not be so many cricket scores in the women's game on the international stage. But yeah, it's one of those where, like, obviously England are looking to build on confidence and score goals, and Serena Wiegmann is looking to find who she wants in her starting 11 ahead of the Euros on home soil next year. Latvia weren't great, hence the score, and England put on a very dominant performance. I was actually really kind of gutted that Wiegmann didn't use one of her subs to bring on a goalkeeper that, you know, could at least just get their first cap. Granted, they wouldn't have had to do much in the game. I think it would have been nice for any Villa fan to see Hannah Hampton come on and make her debut. So it's one of those. Kelly Smith also did a really nice piece on Ellen White becoming England's new all-time record goal scorer as well, which you can check out on The Athletic website if you're interested. So a good kind of week for women's football in terms of England showing how dominant they are on the international stage.
Yeah, Hannah Hampton did a pre-match press conference. Let's hear a chunk of that interview with Hannah Hampton right now.
So I was born with a squint. I had multiple operations when I was younger to try and correct my eyes, and it's never been fully repaired. I mean, I can go back to have operations right now, but I've always delayed it because of I don't see the need. I'm here for a reason, so it's obviously not affecting me in that kind of way, but I have no depth perception, so I can't judge distances. So being a keeper doesn't really make a lot of sense, but you know, it's turned out for the best, I think. If I'm overly tired, you will notice it. I'll have a lazy eye, it will start wandering, and you just have to correct it, and hopefully no one notices. But even just pouring a glass of water, if I'm not holding the cup itself, I will miss the jug and it will be spilt all over the side. I've done that a few times now.
And I did see this, and unbelievable story for a goalkeeper. She's got no depth perception.
Yeah.
That feels like something you might need as a goalkeeper to me. I'm no expert, but honestly, that feels like something that's quite vital. So fair play to her for having the career that she's having, because that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the interview is amazing, and she's very honest and open about the fact that she doesn't have any depth perception. And I'm the same as you. I have normal eyesight, and I can barely see which direction the ball's going in. So how on earth she's able to make so many saves and so many amazing saves that she does, and having such a good season for Villa already, just makes her kind of level of performances so much more impressive. And I definitely think she's going to become England's number one in the next few years as well.
Yeah, I've been really, really impressed by her this season. She's probably the one that's impressed me most out of the Villa women's side, to be honest. It's just the step up in terms of ability. She's unbelievable in goal. So, so quick. Great reactions. Great shot stopper. She's going to have a marvellous career. Now, before we talk about what Global Greg's been writing about, it's worth saying that Aston Villa women's defender Anita Asante has written a column for The Athletic this week about a worrying upturn in incidents of racist abuse. It's a guest column from Anita, so if you haven't checked that out yet, go and do so, because it's a fascinating read. Christian Perslow has been in the media as well, Greg, hasn't he? Mixed reaction to his stint on TalkSport, but then a very, very good in-house interview with the club media. Do you watch both of those, hear both of those?
Yeah, heard both of those, read some of the reaction in national newspapers and in The Athletic as well about his conversation with Simon Jordan and co on TalkSport. I mean, I'd like to focus on the Villa interview, because for me, I thought that was a really, really impressive interview. And I think for Villa supporters, they want to know more from Christian Perslow about Aston Villa rather than, you know, nationwide matters. And he's impressive. His interview was very, very impressive. You know, he tackled the key issues that are facing the club at the moment, the transport issues around the stadium. Supporters want to know what's happening with the capacity and the potential extension of Villa Park. He addressed that. The change in the ownership's name and how Villa are planning to move into global markets and link up potentially with feeder clubs. Every time he speaks on the Villa channel, I like listening to him. He really speaks passionately about Villa. He believes that Villa are one of the biggest clubs in the world, doesn't he? By the way he talks and the potential that they've got and how they should be striving for greatness. And it's just exciting. I just think it's such an exciting time to be a Villa fan, because the owners are so committed. Christian Perslow fights really hard for the club and wants to make this club a better club. So yeah, I was impressed with it.
And I was impressed with your piece earlier on in the week about Aston Villa's youngsters coming through. A good read, Greg. 50 scouts at the Charlton game. Greg, can you just talk about why they were there?
Yeah, well, it was the same against MK Dons as well. I think there was 55 scouts there. Yeah, 55 different clubs were represented, looking at the likes of Keenan Davis and obviously Kearney Chukwuemeka back against MK Dons. But at the Valley on, Tuesday night, Villa were again impressive, the under-21s against a very senior Charlton team. I mean, you know, the midfield, the Charlton midfield consisted of Ben Watson and Harry Arter, two experienced players who have played in the Premier League before. And I thought Bogard and Timir Agbuna handled them very well and performed very well themselves. But the scouts were looking mainly at the attacking players, Cameron Archer, Jaden Filler, Gene Bidace. Finlay Thorndike played quite well as well, and Caleb Chukwuemeka. has attracted a bit of interest as well. So I'm expecting quite a few of those to move in January. There's a full roundup and a lot more details on The Athletic explaining each individual case. Aaron Ramsey's another one who hopes to return to full fitness before the end of January, and he definitely will be looking for a move as well, out on loan. We've seen his brother Jacob move to Doncaster, didn't we? And that kick-started his career. Aaron needs that move now. He needs to go and play men's football because I think he's outgrown Premier League too, as of some of the others. So it'll be interesting to see if they get the moves and how Villa decide to, you know, which ones they allow to go out.
Without giving too much away from your article, Greg, has Gerrard been impressed by the younger players?
Yeah, he's had a closer look at them. He went to the first under-23 game. He liked the look of Philo Jean Bidace. He was very close to the first team under Dean Smith, wasn't he? But just the amount of wingers and attacking players Villa have got, it's just hard for these youngsters coming through. But yeah, there's a couple of them who have impressed. Tim Iragbunam in midfield, somebody who has trained a fair bit as well. But they're very, very young. You know, the 16, 17, 18-year-olds, they're going to get the chance eventually, but it's just about giving them training time first and then seeing how they do out on loan.
Yeah, and just briefly, Holly, your Hex has moved away from the women's team and the men's team, but you've put it on the under-21s, knocked out the cup on your watch.
Stop bringing my Hex up, because I think the more you bring it up, the more it actually becomes a thing. So I'm going to pretend like nothing's happened. We've seen the men's team and the women's team win now since joining the podcast, so that's fine by me.
Aston Villa suffering at every level since you've joined 1874, Holly. Let's finish with the top three then. And this week, we're doing the top three Villa loans, and apparently both in or out qualify. So, Holly, we'll come to you first. Who have you plumped for?
Mine are all in. Would you like just one now or go big and we'll go
we'll
four,
do one
three?
Each. We'll do one each. We'll do okay. One each.
I've actually got five.
That's not a top three, is it? That's a top five.
I'm pretty sure, if my memory serves correctly, Greg actually did a piece on top three signings or best loan signings from Villa a year or so ago, if memory serves correctly.
I'd be surprised if he even remembers that boring piece.
And so I think mine might be similar to that. I'm going to pick for my first one as Snodgrass, because I was obsessed when he was with us.
That's
and
I
really
pick.
Loved him. Something like 17 assists when he was with us. And I think we were really unfortunate to not get promoted, like, because of how well he performed and how much he assisted Villa's playoff final run. So he's definitely up there for me.
Yeah, good player, Robert Snodgrass. Kind of player that comes in on loan and ingrains himself across the whole club. Got a soft spot for Villa still as well. I speak to him every now and again. Greg, who have you gone for? So you got your phone out with your notes. Jeez, there must be some serious loans in there.
It's getting late in the day. Tyrone Mings, Tammy Abraham and James Milner.
No one I asked for.
Oh, I thought we were going to throw
Now who am I going to say? They've all gone now. Who am I going to say?
Simon Dawkins?
No. Who did you say?
Tammy Abraham, James Milner and Tyrone Mings.
You've left me with not a lot there.
Sam Johnston?
Robbie Keane, he was another one of mine.
Yeah, I did quite a lot. Yeah, I'll go Robbie Keane. Nice one. I liked Robbie Keane. He played six games, but I'd say in those six games he was Villa's player of the season under Alex McLeish. Honestly, he was so far ahead of anything else that played that season. I'd genuinely probably put him as the player of the season. So yeah, I'll go Robbie Keane. But yeah, Sam Johnston's a nice shout as well. He had a good season in goal for Villa, now slumming it at West Bromwich Albion. That's it then for this week's edition of 1874. Just the one game this weekend, but it's an interesting one against Steven Gerrard's old manager, Brendan Rodgers, and it absolutely isn't a derby because West Midlands v East Midlands isn't a derby, even though all the Midlands teams seem to class Villa as a derby because we are massive. Let's hope we can get back to winning ways. Thanks to Greg and thanks to Holly and thanks to all of you out there for listening as well. And as ever, up the Villa.